absolutely bizarre to do a reading where I knew that people in the audience were like elementary school teachers and kids I'd gone to school with. To know that they'd read the book and read about my first sexual encounters, that was a trip.
We got donations of money from literally all over the world. It was just extraordinary. People just sent us money so that I could make an album of gay and lesbian songs. And so I did.
Smash all the recordings of Tchaikovsky's music.
If you don't want your children being influenced by queers.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. The assassination of a gay political leader stuns the Netherlands, a young writer brings his snap back home, and small talk and music with a lesbian Aussie music legend. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Brian Nunes.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending May 11th, 2002. Europe was rocked this week by the murder of the Netherlands openly gay maverick politician Pim Fortuyn. It was the Netherlands' first political assassination in 330 years and is widely viewed as a landmark in European history. The slaying came just 9 days before national elections that were expected to bring the new List Pim Fortuyn party into the Netherlands' ruling coalition, with perhaps one-fifth of the seats in parliament, and might even have made Fortuyn the first openly gay prime minister. The cabinet considered postponing the vote, but decided it will go on as planned on May 15th, with Fortuyn's name on the ballot. However, all active campaigning has been suspended as a gesture of respect. Fortuyn was shot 6 times as he was leaving a radio station in Hilversum. A riot ensued as hundreds of Fortuyn supporters damaged shops and cars near the Parliament building in The Hague before police prevailed in a violent confrontation. Animal rights activist Volker van de Graaf was quickly arrested and charged with a murder. Although he has been silent since his arrest, van der Graaf may have been reacting to Fortuyn's desire to lift the Netherlands' ban on fur farming. He's believed to have acted alone.
Fortuyn never held elected office, but was a former sociology professor, TV commentator and lecturer, magazine news columnist, and author of several books. He rose to political prominence over the last year, first in the Livable Netherlands Party, which ejected him for criticizing Muslims, and then in his own party, which won recently more than a third of the seats in the city council of Rotterdam, where he lived. He was a colorful figure, blunt-spoken, sporting a shaved head, pinstripe suits, and loud ties. A political gadfly who stirred debate, he was uniquely a phenomenon of the Netherlands. Never shy about his sexual orientation, he spoke publicly of his backroom encounters and patronage of sex workers, but this was not an issue in the first nation to grant full equal marriage rights to same-gender couples, where sex work is legal.
To his horror, commentators tended to link his name with extreme right-wingers such as France's Jean-Marie Le Pen and Austria's Georg Haider because he wanted to close the Netherlands to immigration. But he was not a racist, and he affirmed a national responsibility to those already welcomed within the borders. He was someone who dared political incorrectness to say publicly that at 16 million, the densely populated Netherlands are full up, and that the nation has not well assimilated the huge numbers of immigrants it's taken in over the last 2 decades, as shown by ghettoization and rising crime despite an economic boom. He was most harshly critical of the Muslim immigrants because of their religious leaders' public denunciations of homosexuality and tradition of second-class status for women, values at odds with his nation's. He may be better described as a libertarian and populist who captured the support of a broad spectrum of citizens who feel the long-ruling major parties have lost touch with their own daily lives.
Fortuyn was widely mourned. In Rotterdam, perhaps 100,000 people viewed his body as it lay in state at the Roman Catholic Laurentius and Elizabeth Cathedral, and tens of thousands lined the streets for his funeral cortege. He's temporarily interred in a family plot in a nearby town, but will ultimately be permanently entombed in the Italian village of Provisano di San Giorgio della Ricinvelda, where Fortown kept a vacation home. Other memorials included a silent march in Amsterdam, real and virtual condolence registers, and piles of flowers and messages left outside his home, near the assassination site, and in the National Square in Amsterdam.
Two other notable deaths were reported this week. In Germany, famed transgender Charlotte von Malsdorf died at age 74 of a heart attack. Born Lothar Berfelde, von Malsdorf dared to cross-dress during the Nazi regime and under the communist rule of East Berlin, as recounted in her autobiography, I Am My Own Woman. A high-profile media celebrity in Germany, she also created museums in Berlin and in Sweden.
In the U.S., makeup artist to the stars Kevin O'Quinn died at age 40 of metabolic problems from a pituitary brain tumor. He served Hollywood's A-list at $6,000 per day and wrote three successful books about makeup. But he never forgot the anti-gay harassment that drove him out of school at age 15 and worked with New York City's Hetrick Martin Institute on behalf of today's gay and lesbian youth. He's survived by his partner, Jeremy Antunes.
A memorial was dedicated this week to the man some have called Australia's first gay martyr. A bronze plaque was ceremonially unveiled at the University of Adelaide on the 30th anniversary of the death of Dr. George Duncan, who briefly taught law there. Just 7 weeks after his arrival, while cruising in a park on the banks of the River Torrens, he's believed to have been assaulted by a group of homophobes who threw him into the river, where he drowned. He was 42. Although the murder remains officially unsolved today, the dramatic death sparked the state of South Australia to become the first in the nation to decriminalize homosexual acts between consenting adults.
New Zealand's parliament has given final approval to a measure providing for harsher sentencing for hate-motivated assaults, including attacks based on the perpetrator's perception of the victim's sexual orientation or gender identity. A section of the Sentencing Reform Act specifies bias motivation as an aggravating factor. The section, which prevailed over strong opposition from the religious right, may be New Zealand's first explicit legislative recognition of hate crimes.
There were three significant advances this week in U.S. legislation. The City Council of Dallas, Texas, voted 13-2 to adopt an ordinance prohibiting sexual orientation discrimination in housing, employment, and public accommodations. Mayor Laura Miller had made a campaign promise to work for its enactment.
The New York State Assembly and Senate both unanimously passed the September 11th Victims and Families Relief Act. This includes language specifically intended to ensure that partners of gays and lesbians victimized in the terrorist attack on the World Trade Center will receive federal aid funds as well as state-level benefits.
The Connecticut State Senate followed the State House in approving a bill to allow individuals to designate anyone they choose, including same-gender partners, although they're not specifically referred to visit them in hospitals and nursing homes and to make certain medical and post-mortem decisions for them.
A U.S.-led move to add language against recognition of same-gender couples to a United Nations Statement on Child Welfare failed this week. A special session of the UN General Assembly gave consensus approval to the final version of A World Fit for Children, which offers proposals for promoting children's health and education and their safety from abuse, violence, and exploitation. It continues past UN commitments to adolescents' rights to sex education and reproductive and sexual health services. The U.S. delegation had sought to include a statement restricting the definition of marriage exclusively to one man and one woman. Instead, the final version says that the family is the basic unit of society and as such should be strengthened, but repeats a past call for recognition that in different cultural, social, and political systems, various forms of the family exist.
And finally, it was no small victory when 17-year-old Toronto-area gay Mark Hall brought his boyfriend Jean-Paul Dumont to the prom this week at his high school, Oshawa's Monsignor John Parema Catholic Secondary School. Told by his principal that he could not bring a male date to the prom, Hall appealed to the Durham Region Catholic School Board, only to be rejected with a statement written before he was even heard. The board believes that dancing and dating represent a degree of courtship that they cannot condone, given Roman Catholic doctrine against homosexual acts. Even a lesbian student suggested Hall should attend a secular high school if he wanted to take a boy to the prom. But the widely reported case won the attention of leading Canadian politicians and human rights groups. And with their support, Hall sued in an Ontario court for an emergency order to require his admission to the prom. Ontario Superior Court Justice Robert McKinnon granted that order just hours before the prom began, declaring the school was clearly violating Hall's constitutional rights, discriminating against him, and interfering in his private life. There's very sharp disagreement between the school board, which sees the ruling as applying only narrowly to the prom, and Hall's legal team, which view the decision as a landmark providing broad protections for gay and lesbian students in religious schools. The legal struggle will continue, with both sides declaring they're willing to pursue the issue all the way to the Supreme Court of Canada. But Hall and Dumont had plenty to celebrate as they rode up in a limousine, wearing tuxedos and holding hands, and entered the prom to the applause of the students. A sign on one student's car read, "God bless Mark Hall. Now, let's dance."
That's News Wrap for the week ending May 11th, 2002. Written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Brian Nunes.
The words and music of Aussie lesbian music pioneer Judy Small, tracing two decades to Let the Rainbow Shine, later in the program. We each have our own recollections of youthful angst, and for lesbian, gay, bi, and trans teens, the angst is often even more intense than for others. But author, syndicated columnist, and Lexington, Virginia native Kirk Reed has found the humor in being openly gay while growing up in the Bible Belt during the 1980s. He chatted earlier this year with Abigail Garner about his latest book, How I Learned to Snap, a small-town coming-of-age and coming-out story, and his discovery that you can indeed go home again.
It wasn't that long ago, actually, that you're a teen. I mean, oftentimes when people write their memoirs, they're, you know, up there in age, and at the age of 29, you're looking back on your teens. What's that like?
Well, I read it when I was 27. It was about 10 years after, and it was spooky to look back. On one hand, it's not that much time compared to most of the memoirs that are out there, but on the other hand, you know, 10 years is a long time. I was looking at a lot of your books. I obsessively kept journals during high school, so I was looking at those. I kept all the notes that girls passed me in the hallways. And so I really went back to school in a lot of ways.
You talk in it about being an openly gay teen. And what kind of, were there examples around, or what kind of influences did you have to learn about what it meant to be gay when you were younger?
I didn't really have much. There was, when I was a freshman in high school, there was a senior, a guy named Jesse Fowler, who was a huge influence on me. He had big, wild hair and made his own clothes, and he was just wild and had an amazing fashion sense, and he got the crap beat out of him every day, and I learned a lot by watching him. But, you know, this was the late 80s. This was at a time when there wasn't much. There just wasn't much on TV or in mass media.
I've read parts of this book, and you talk about the importance of out gay adults to go back to the town where they grew up to remind people where they came from.
I think that all too often gay people have a bad experience, or they have a bad taste in their mouth for their hometown, and they disappear. You know, they go away to college, or they get out of high school and do whatever they do, and they leave town and they never come back. Or if they do come back to visit their families, you know, they get in and out as fast as possible. I went home this Christmas. I did a reading in my community for this book, and place was packed, and it was absolutely bizarre to do a reading where I knew that people in the audience were like elementary school teachers and old theater directors of mine and kids I'd gone to school with, and to know that they'd read the book and read about my first sexual encounters, that was a trip.
Yeah.
And then and then the other thing was just to know that they were there and that they were being supportive, and it was pretty amazing.
Have you had any negative reactions from people?
I have. I've had a few. A few folks in my family are not all that thrilled with me right now. I'm getting 5 to 10 emails a day from people who've read the book. And some of them are folks that I grew up with. And there's a chapter in the book where I talk about a kid who pushed me up against the locker and called me names. And it was just kind of a gritty picture of what verbal assault is like.
And in that situation, the teacher saw it, right, and ignored it?
The teacher saw it and ignored it.
Yeah.
And the kid who did it, his brother emailed me the other day and said, you know, I know you changed the name, but I think I can figure out that this is my brother, and I'm just horrified and embarrassed. And he went to apologize. And it just blew my mind. I'm really happy that I changed the names because, you know, when people are teenagers, whether they're gay teenagers or homophobic teenagers, I mean, you got to give them room to grow up.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
I don't want to freeze anybody in their development.
Right.
And that goes for my family, too. I mean, some of them have really come around and accepted me more.
Have you had reactions from teens that say, yeah, thanks for being...
Oh, yeah. It's a given now that every time I open my email, I'm going to be in tears by the end of it. Because, you know, some 14-year-old emails me from, you know, Central Texas. And, you know, it's amazing. I could never have imagined some of the emails that I would get.
Kirk, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Abigail.
That was Kirk Reed, author of How I Learned to Snap, a small-town coming-of-age and coming-out story published by Hill Street Press. You can find out more about the book at his website, kirkreed.com. That's KIRKREAD.com. He was interviewed at KFAI in Minneapolis, Minnesota by Abigail Garner, host of the station's Fresh Fruit program and creator of the website FamiliesLikeMine.com.
This is Aaron Frick, author of Reflections of a Rock Lobster. You've tuned into This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio news magazine.
Last time on This Way Out, our resident queer musicologist, J.D. Doyle, rediscovered the herstory of lesbian music in Australia with Nikki Mortier of the groundbreaking Lavender Blues.
I said, sort of half-jokingly, we should just make a record. And everyone laughed and fell into hysterics about how silly the idea was.
Lavender Blues, just come and see. It's a lavender world when your feelings run free.
That group released the first openly lesbian album in Australia in 1978. And they also have a connection with JD's interview guest in the conclusion of his two-part musical expedition down under, the legendary Judy Small.
Some women love women, some men love men, some raise children, some never do. You can dream all the day, never reaching the end of everything possible.
Judy has been a prominent force in Australia in both the gay and lesbian and general folk music scene for over 20 years. Judy, how did you get started in folk music?
Well, I've always been a folkie, and I always say that I think that's historical. It's just that I was a child of the 60s, you know. I was born in 1953, so when the folk boom hit, I was like 8, 9, 10, 11. And I think Go Tell It on the Mountain means much more to a child that age than I Can't Get No Satisfaction, you know. So I just fell in love with the folk music, and particularly with the women's voices. Their music just spoke to me in a way that pop and rock didn't at that time. And it always has. I've always been interested in music that has something to say more than I love you, baby, will you be mine? So I guess that's why I'm a folkie. And because it fits so well with my politics, because there has always been music in political movements When I started to get interested in politics, the folk music was already there for me, so the blending of the two just seemed like a natural progression.
That's a wonderful answer.
You just wind me up and I keep going.
Okay, Nikki Mortia of the Lavender Blues told me that you once did a warm-up act for them.
That's right.
Do you remember that?
I remember that very well. The Lavender Blues were certainly one of the first, if not the first, lesbian band in Australia. And I did a warm-up concert with them. In fact, I think I played with them several times. But the one that I remember most is the one in 1981 when I was really just starting out as a professional performer. And I did a concert with them in a little community hall in suburban Sydney. And that I remember that concert particularly for several reasons. One is that it was the last time that I ever sang with Carol Deegan, who was a very good friend of mine and who was one of the Lavender Blues and who died of cancer a couple of years later. And the other reasons is because that concert led to my professional career. It was after that concert that a group of friends of mine said, well, when are you going to start recording? And I said, oh, I don't know when I get the money. And they said, well, how much would it cost? And I said, hell, I don't know, $10,000? And they said, fine, we'll raise it for you. And they did. So that concert particularly stays in my mind for all sorts of reasons. But the Lavender Blues were, as I say, pretty much the first. And their album, their Lavender Blues album, is still a classic of the genre, I think.
What was the first song you recorded with gay lyrics?
The first song I recorded with openly gay lyrics was a song called Turn Right, Go Straight. And that was in 1983 I recorded that. And that was for my second album, which in America was called Mothers, Daughters, Wives. That was a song about growing up in a religious environment and the messages that one gets. And I got it from a church notice board of all places. You know, those sayings they have on church notice boards are very good for getting quotes for songs. But this one said, to get to heaven, turn right and go straight. And I thought, what a wonderful thing to be able, you know, to be able to write a song about. And so I did.
Tell us about Country Town Gay Time Blues.
That was one of the first songs I ever wrote. It was certainly the first gay and lesbian song I ever wrote. And I actually wrote that song in about 1978 when I had left the country town that I grew up in and gone to the city to go to university. It's certainly my experience that that most people who grew up in small communities have some sort of the same experience that I did, which is, you know, feeling like you're alone but knowing you're not and not really being able to say anything about that. But I just wanted to make the point that, you know, we are everywhere. It's as simple as that.
I grew up in a country town. Places like that, they put you down for being left-handed, let alone gay. Well, the local hairdresser headed the list drawn up by the townsfolk. Oh, but they missed a hell of a lot.
That was a little of the song Country Town Gay Time Blues. Judy, tell us about your latest CD, Let the Rainbow Shine.
As I said before, I'd been recording songs about gay and lesbian issues for a very long time. And I had had over the years just enormous support from the gay and lesbian community, and particularly from the lesbian community. They have always been the core of my audience, even in the folk music scene. And so I sort of wanted to give something back, I guess, and make an album just for the gay and lesbian community. I mean, not that it's just for the gay and lesbian community, but particularly for the gay and lesbian community. And the way that that came about, I just love this story. We just sent out to the universe and said, hey, Judy wants to make an album about gay and lesbian issues. Can anyone help? And we got donations of money from literally all over the world. We got them from Sweden, from Fiji, from South Africa. It was just extraordinary. People just sent us money so that I could make an album of gay and lesbian songs, and so I did.
Do you have a favorite song from that CD?
Well, I have a different favorite song every week from that CD. I think at the moment I really like Influenced by Queers, simply because those issues are still around, and I'm still hearing right-wing people in this country anyway saying, you know, well, I don't care what you do. If you want to be a gay or lesbian, that's your business, but don't come anywhere near my children, you know, that sort of ridiculous stuff. So I think that's one of my favourites at the moment.
You see them on the television, hear them on the radio, read it in the magazines, it's everywhere you go. I don't care what people do behind the locks and bedroom doors, who you are in private, there is nobody's affair but yours. But there's a line that should be drawn in order to avoid the tears, and I don't want my children being influenced by queers. I don't want my children being influenced by queers. Okay, so get out the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel.
You don't want your children being influenced by queers.
Smash all the recordings of Tchaikovsky's music.
If you don't want your children being influenced by queers.
Burn all the movies of Marlena Dietrich.
If you don't want your children being influenced by queers.
Don't let them wear Cartier or Johnny Versace.
If you don't want your children being influenced by queers.
Judy Small has recorded 10 albums since she did that warm-up act for the Lavender Blues in 1982. And you can find out more about her music at www.judysmall.net. And again, her latest is the one that contains all openly gay songs. It's called Let the Rainbow Shine. For This Way Out, I'm J.D. Doyle.
Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Brian Nunes, Graham Underhill, Jason Lynn, Chris Ambidge, Rex Walkner, Callum Bonacci, Abigail Garner, and J.D. Doyle contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's an easy link to the show from our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. To learn how you can help in This Way Out's critical struggle to stay on the air, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. We really need your help. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KHSU Arcata, California, 6RTR Perth, West Australia, WCSB Cleveland, Ohio, and more than 125 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Please stay tuned.